I'm glad the fans who paid their hard-earned money to watch the game last night at Chase Center got to see Zach Zarba and Tony Brothers do their thing, because that's exactly what we all tune in to see is the ref show. Yesterday, you were early. Last night, on time. Right now, you late. Welcome to You Late with Jasmine and Nikias, ready to give you the rundown of last night and what's coming up. I am not Jasmine. Surprising as that may sound, I believe she is still on vacation. Not sure if she's at her second or third vacation home, but you know what? That's her business. I'm not going to pry. You Late is presented by Buzzr, the hottest new app for watching the best moments in live sports. Download Buzzr in the App Store or wherever you get your apps and never miss the moment with Buzzr. Fourth quarter and overtime, now 99 cents. I am Jared, the producer of this fine show, and Nikias is with me. Nikias, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I am doing great. Nikias, we had a very entertaining and storyline-driven game two of the NBA Finals, and thankfully, we got a split. We have a series, which is always what you want to see.
There you go.
You know, the game was tight in the first half. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum shot the ball well early, and, you know, the Warriors did what they typically do in the third quarter. They played great defense. You know, Jordan Poole hit two of the longer three-pointers you're going to see at the end of the quarter to kind of cap it off. And then the fourth quarter was basically a glorified scrimmage from that point on.
Yeah, it was. Well, it could have been a fun game. Like, the game ended up in a blowout, so that kind of stinks in the second half. But the first half could have been a lot fun. But there were so many foul calls and stoppages in the first portion of the first quarter. I'm just like, yo, I'm trying to get a feel for what these offenses are trying to do. I'm trying to see what defenses are taking away. On the defense front, Draymond Green on Jaylen Brown for most of that quarter and for most of the half was interesting to me. We saw Golden State do this in the Western Conference Finals against Jalen Brunson when they were playing the Dallas Mavericks. I was kind of waiting to see if and or when the Mavericks would try to pull that gambit against Jaylen Brown. And just a quick shout out to Draymond Green, who set the tone early, 10 seconds into the game.
Yes.
Forces a jump ball against Al Horford as he's waiting to flow into a dribble handoff with someone. I'm just like, oh, Draymond is here. And as we would see as the quarter went on, Draymond was really here. There were a lot of bumps, a lot of hashtag antics. Quick shout out to my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. There's a tie-up with Grant Williams in the first quarter that I'm still not sure how Grant Williams got called for a foul on. There was the foul he had on a Jaylen Brown three-pointer that ended with his feet on Jaylen Brown's head somehow. And I'm just like, well, that's interesting. And so there was a lot of talk about that, a lot of talk about, like, he got a technical early. He didn't get one for the Jaylen Brown play, which is weird. Not even tweeted about that one. But as wild as some of the things got with Draymond in the first half, a masterful defensive performance from him. And considering all the chatter that was around him recording a podcast after the game one loss, he came out, set the tone early, and he played his tail off on the defensive end as well. So he deserves his credit. I am excited for the rest of this series because I think we've seen in these first two games what both of these teams look like when they're in the mud offensively. Particularly the fourth quarter in game one, Golden State couldn't get anything to go because Boston locked in on all their off-ball actions. The switches were tight, and they just forced Golden State late into the clock. And we saw in game two, particularly in the third quarter, if Boston isn't able to find cracks, and if Derek White is now taking threes with 3 seconds left on the shot clock instead of 11 or 12, it's an entirely different thing. You mentioned early how effective Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum were early in that game. The water got shut off pretty quickly.
Right.
And so I feel like both teams feel good about where they are heading into the third quarter of game two. Boston turned the ball over, I think, 7 times in the first quarter, and they ended up down by 2.5. And it's like, oh, well, they probably feel pretty good. If they can just tighten up this screw, they'd probably be fine. They did not end up being fine in that game. And even in game one, Draymond said it after the game. Like, we felt like we dominated the game for the first 40, 42 minutes, and then Boston just took off late. So I think both teams are kind of like, we have some things to clean up on offense from an execution standpoint. Defensively, they should both feel pretty good about where they are. So it's really going to boil down to offensive execution for me.
Yeah, you said a lot there I want to piggyback off of. First of all, I'm glad the fans who paid their hard-earned money to watch the game last night at Chase Center got to see Zach Zarba and Tony Brothers do their thing, because that's exactly what we all tune in to see is the ref show. So yes. I'm glad they showed up in the biggest stage in the NBA. You mentioned Draymond Green. I am completely with you. To me, that was the biggest difference in the game. He set the tone. I kind of like the fact that he picks up that early technical foul and then he knows he can kind of push the boundaries because it's an NBA finals game and they're not going to kick him out. And he even said as much after the game, basically saying, you know what, I've earned preferential treatment. And yeah, you kind of have, you know, you have a reputation and it's well-deserved. And, you know, it's absolutely incredible to watch. So did you have any issue with the refs not calling the second technical there? Because I think I'm in the minority with this opinion. I didn't think it was a technical. I wouldn't have called it, but you know, I thought it was a kind of a soft play. But like, you know, when I heard, you know, Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson talking about it, and they're like, well, in the regular season that would be a technical, they throw him out of the game.
That's mostly where I land on it. Like, the rules are the rules. Like, enforce them. I understand why there's a sliding scale, and ultimately the game does become less interesting if Draymond Green is thrown out. That makes it a little bit easier for Boston to generate some stuff offensively, and that
it changes the whole game.
It changes the whole game. So like, I do get the argument from like a entertainment standpoint and just from, hey, we don't want to throw guys out for nothing. However, I don't think the interaction with Jaylen Brown was nothing. And again, like, if you're going to have sliding scales, and I understand the thought process behind having those, how do you set the sliding scales? Like, what is the threshold for Draymond versus the threshold for Giannis versus the threshold for, someone brought this up in my mentions when I tweeted about it yesterday, DeMarcus Cousins never got that kind of leeway. No. Never got that kind of leeway. Like, if he would have fouled Jaylen Brown on the three and he looked at the ref the wrong way, he would have got a second technical. He would have been out of there without even factoring in the foot on the head, the pulling gets like, regardless, if he just looks at the ref after getting called for that foul, he probably gets the second take. So like, how do we balance what other players get if we're working with the sliding scale? So like, I would just rather it be either raise the threshold for a tech in general, because you said like you thought it was kind of a soft play to even call that a tech. And like, that's a fine opinion to have. If we want to just raise the threshold overall, so we don't have to worry about this being a debate, I am fine with that. And we just do that across the board and there are no issues. But if it is in the regular season, that's probably a double take because of the interaction. If it's a double take due to the interaction early in the playoffs, I don't know why we skip that because we're in the finals now. Like, there has to be some sort of consistency. And I think that's what a lot of fans and even players feel when it comes to refs. If you're going to call the game tight, fine, just do it all the time. If you're going to call the game loose, fine, just call it like that all the time. And so then you kind of know what the bar is, because with the Draymond thing, we can joke about it, but it's also kind of true. Like, if he gets the first tech, he does ramp it up and basically dares them to call the second tech. Or if he has five fouls, he dares them to call six. And other players get that too. A lot of stars get that when they get five fouls or they get two fouls in the first quarter or something. It's okay, I'm going to continue to play the same way. I'm going to ramp it up. I'm going to dare you to make the call.
It's smart. It's really smart.
It's very smart on the players' hands, and I don't blame them for this. This is an institutional thing. Like, referees need to be consistent. Call it tight, call it loose, call it in the middle, but do that throughout. And with the technicals, if this is the threshold, don't call a tech if it doesn't hit this threshold. And if it does, it doesn't matter who hits it. Call it. That's what I want to see.
All right. You mentioned earlier the turnovers. Ime Udoka talked about it post-game last night. 36 points off of 18 turnovers. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is the Warriors' defense just playing really out of their mind last night. But what does Boston need to do to clean that up?
I think they just need to make smarter decisions. Like, Golden State did force a lot of those turnovers. And they weren't, you know, we always have to differentiate between live ball turnovers and dead ball turnovers. Like, a moving screen is not going to be as detrimental to your offense as I'm throwing a pass to the corner and Steph's rotating to the corner, picking it off, and now it's a 4-on-3 going the other way. And so the fact that Boston committed so many live ball turnovers seems to be even more of an issue. So I think for them, it's going to be ball security. As great as Jaylen Brown has been throughout this postseason and how good he's been this season overall, if there is if there is a limitation in this game, it is his handle. And you saw when Draymond got the matchup early, like he was pressing up into Jaylen Brown, forcing him to create with limited airspace. There was a play early in the first half when Jaylen Brown gets Steph Curry on a switch, which is a matchup that Boston wants, though Steph has been very good defensively all year long. But that's a matchup they want. And that switch happens late in the clock, and Steph Curry presses up into Jaylen Brown's jersey before he can even begin to size him up and attack. I'm just like, okay, this is smart. And so that's something that Jaylen Brown is going to have to account for and adjust to and just be better at. There were some wild passes thrown in this game. There was the Marcus Smart bounce pass to a cutter, despite his cutter being like 6 yards behind the pass that he threw. Basically threw a bounce pass to a Warrior. And I'm just like, well, yeah, one, it's a turnover, so that sucks. But also just what did you even see to try to make that pass good? So like there are some things that could just be cleaned up from the players. Golden State's going to be good enough and keyed in enough. You can't help them out with bad decisions.
Right. And you mentioned the struggles there. You know, Marcus Smart only had 2 points. Al Horford had a great game one, only had 2 points in game two. You know, Derek White kind of took a step back as well. But I keep looking at this Clay thing and the fact that he was playing deep into the fourth quarter of a game where the Warriors were up by 25 to 30 points throughout, just in an effort to try to get them going. Are you more worried about Clay at this point, or are you worried about, you know, Jason Tatum, who, you know, his shoulders still bother him a little bit? He saw him kind of wincing earlier in the game, and then he finished the game minus 36.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't put too much stock into the minus 36. The Warriors starters, I mean, their lineups just blitz Boston. Like, that was less about Tatum and more that Golden State just outplayed him. But I would say I'm more worried about Tatum because we've seen, as we saw in game two, like, you can afford the bad Clay game if you have Jordan Poole filling up in his place. And Jordan Poole had a huge bounce back, particularly in the second half.
Yep.
And they need that from him. That's what kind of made game one stink. And again, Golden State could have won that game if they closed the game better. But that's what made the game one stink, because you got great Steph, you got bad Clay, and you got bad Jordan Poole. You can't have both of those guys off. And so I'm less worried about that. For Boston, Jason Tatum's your best player. He's the head of the stake. And as good as Jaylen Brown has been, you can't count on him to give you like a 38-point effort while Jason Tatum struggles. Like, you need both of those two to pack a punch. Jaylen carried the scoring load in game one, but you also got the 26 from Horford. You got 20 plus from Derek White. Jason Tatum didn't shoot well, but he was there as a defender, as a playmaker, et cetera, et cetera. If Jason Tatum is hampered on both ends of the floor, it just heightens the responsibility for everyone else. And they just don't have the same safety net as the Warriors do, I don't think.
How big is it for Golden State that they got Gary Payton back in the lineup last night? Because when he checked into that game for the first time, you heard this audible roar from the crowd there in San Francisco. And it was like, oh, it's kind of different now.
Yeah, it's big. Like, he gives them another inverted screener just to force some weird matchups for you. Gives them another transition threat. Defensively, he's one of, if not their best on-ball defender, period. And so just having him to be able to throw on a Jaylen Brown to bother his handle. If they want to throw him on Jason Tatum for a couple of possessions to bother his handle, if they want to have him chasing Marcus Smart or going over Derek White, he just changes so much from off the bench. And timely return for him, because Andre Iguodala made his playoff debut in game one, ruled out for game two, and not sure what his status is going to be. So if you're filling up those minutes with Gary Payton II, who's honestly just better than him at this stage of his career, that's a pretty big boost for Golden State coming off the bench.
I can't wait to see game three. We'll get into that a little bit later in the buzzer beats, but I want to hit on the other big news from the weekend in the NBA. Quinn Snyder stepping down as the coach of the Utah Jazz. And then we got a not so cryptic follow-up from Woj, maybe an hour or so later, about Donovan Mitchell being, quote, unsettled, unnerved, and wondering what this means for the franchise's future, which I don't know how else you read that other than, yeah, Donovan Mitchell wants out.
It's adorable is what it is. Like, one, Quinn Snyder is one heck of a coach, and him stepping down, especially at this stage of the offseason, is kind of weird. And I say this stage because we just saw the Lakers hire a coach. We've seen the Kenny Atkinsons to Charlotte rumors starting to heat up. We've seen a couple other field spots looking to be filled. And so for Quinn Snyder to announce this now means Utah is starting their coaching search a little later in the game than other teams who've had since the regular season ended to kind of do what they want to do on that front. So not that they can't hire a great coach or find a great option there, but it's just going to be a little bit more difficult because of the timing. On the Donovan Mitchell note, I say adorable because, like, there has been smoke around the Donovan Mitchell wanting out of Utah eventually thing for a year and a half, 2 years. It was there before he signed the extension. It's there now. And, like, some of that is just manufactured from the outside and teams like, hey, we would love to get Donovan Mitchell if he becomes available. And people read that as saying Donovan Mitchell wants out. And, like, that isn't the case. But there's been enough smoke and enough internal chatter to where it's like, okay, it's not inconceivable. And so now you get the Quinn Snyder thing, fresh off of the year that Utah had, which featured yet another Rudy versus Donovan type thing that became more of a thing than it should have been. If you remember the comments earlier when Rudy Gobert was complimenting what Phoenix had built from an identity standpoint, and he named Devin Booker very specifically as a guy that now cares about defense and is playing hard and stuff. And there were rumblings that Donovan Mitchell's camp didn't like that, and it felt like a shot. You had Quinn Snyder basically saying, hey, these guys are cool. Stop talking about it. They even sit beside each other on the team bus. And I'm just like, okay, that's a little bit odd. And the postseason ends the way it ends, the first round out. Of course, the Quinn Snyder news is kind of the life raft for Donovan Mitchell to be like, okay, well, hey, I've said all the right things so far. I've said I wanted to be here. I've said me and Rudy want to be cool. The playoffs happen. That season happens. Now Quinn Snyder's out. And in that Wolves report, it mentions that Quinn Snyder was a big reason why Donovan Mitchell committed to signing the long-term deal. And if you believe that, now Snyder's out, this is the chance for Mitchell to be like, okay, hey, I'm just kind of reading the writing on the wall here. I'm not forcing the issue. I'm a young guy that cares about winning, which he does. And this seems to be up in flux. And I don't want to be a part of like a rebuilding process or retooling process.
It gives him the excuse to force the issue.
Yeah, it kind of gives them like reasonable pause. Even, and again, like this could have been coming anyway. But now this is like, all right, let me just hop on this. Like there are a few opportunities for Damian Lillard to pull this with the way the last season and a half has gone in Portland. And he's stuck to his gun. So we're going to be watching that one too. But I think that's why I say adorable. Like this is great timing for Donovan Mitchell to make the power move if he wanted to make it.
More power to him. Let's get into the Buzzer Beats. Shout out to the Buzzer Beats. Follow on Twitter at Buzzer Beats. Subscribe to the newsletter. Yes, kids, email is still cool. Listen to the podcast. Harris does a nice job hosting it. I do a great job producing it. Be sure to follow the Buzzer app at the App Store or wherever you get your apps. 99 cents in the fourth quarter and overtime. And what else are we looking forward to other than Wednesday? Game 3 of the NBA Finals. The series shifts to Boston. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to kind of see how the Celtics adjust in game 3.
Yeah, like don't let the game 2 results stink, particularly the second half for Boston. But zoom out, they got the split. They won game 1. They got 2 coming at home now. Like at worst, this is going to be a 2-2 series heading to game 5, ideally. And ideally, it's 3-1 going back to Chase Center if they handle their business. So big opportunity coming in this game 3. If you are looking for some WNBA games to supplement your basketball taste before that Wednesday, we do have a pair of games on Tuesday. The Minnesota Lynx are taking on the New York Liberty, and the Atlanta Dream, Ryan Howard led, will be taking on the Seattle Storm on Tuesday night. So check that out. A nice mix of young and older star power. The Lynx still have Sylvia Fowles. This is her swan song season, and she is still bullying people in the post. Sabrina Ionescu is starting to heat up over the last few games. Ryan Howard, again, looks like the front runner for Rookie of the Year, already one of the best scorers in the W. In Seattle, Breonna Stewart, very, very good. Still waiting to see Sue Bird. She's missed a couple of games, but there's plenty there to like if you want to watch some basketball before the finals game on Wednesday.
I'm just going to say it. I have nothing but respect, and I say this sincerely, to those who are gutting it out. I'm watching the NBA Finals game last night. You can see Jason Tatum, not 100%. Gary Payton, I mean, he literally just came back from the elbow injury. Who knows, like, what percentage he's actually at? I mean, he's good enough to play, obviously. Mm-hmm. Robert Williams, he looks like he can barely move.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a little tough to watch there. But you're watching that, and then you watch, like, the hockey playoffs, and I don't mean to turn this into a please like my sport thing, but you see, you know, some of the stuff the guys there are going through. And then after the game ends last night, I'm scrolling through Twitter, and I follow a lot of wrestling people on Twitter, and they mention the Cody Rhodes thing. And for those who are not familiar with it, just Google Cody Rhodes torn pec, and you will see what exactly he was dealing with last night in the main event of the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, wrestling in the main event with a torn pec. And I say all that to say, last night during the NBA game, when I got up, I stubbed my toe on the way to the kitchen and was basically crying like a baby for 5 minutes. So I don't know how these premier, you know, world-class athletes function at this level. I just know I can't do it. So nothing but respect for them.
And like you joked about yourself, but like, this is also where I always have an issue with the whole dichotomy of playing injured, because Cody Rhodes probably just shouldn't have been out there. Just looking at how that looked. If this was a regular season game, we probably don't see Jason Tatum. We definitely don't see Robert Williams. And like, if either of those guys, if Cody Rhodes, like, hey, I just can't do this main event, and they have to switch that up, there would be a vocal subset of fans. I don't know if they call them the majority or minority. Like, that's not my expertise. But there would be a vocal sect of those fans calling Cody Rhodes soft. Because, hey, Mankind wrestled through like 600 thumbtacks. Right. And yada, yada, yada. Like, you're soft. If Jason Tatum didn't play, oh, Kobe's your idol. He would have played through this. You're soft. Robert Williams, you can't move. Al Horford is 36 years old or whatever he is, and he's playing as hard as he can. You're soft. And it's just like, no, you can't do what these guys do. And so if a player of that magnitude on this stage says, hey, I can't play, or again, a wrestler like Cody Rhodes, who's in the WWE, if he says, hey, I can't wrestle, it should be a testament to what their injuries are that they can't, not some mark against their manhood because they decide, hey, this is too much of an injury to work through. So that's my spiel on that. Like, props to them. Also, we just need to be better about talking about how athletes deal with injuries. I just have a couple of things. One, just to bounce off the ref point from earlier, we don't come to watch the referees.
No.
Like, we just don't. And on the WNBA front, I was watching the Aces Wings game before game two of the finals. Asia Wilson fouled out of that game. All but one of those fouls were absolutely laughable. It was insane. And that's not even me just saying, like, she's a star, she should get star treatment. Like, just objectively bad calls, period. And it's like, what are we doing here? Shout out to Kelsey Plum, career high 32 points to kind of carry the Aces home against the Wings. But that was some of the worst officiating I've seen in quite some time. And just on a personal slash nerdy slash unrelated note, for sports games, I am an avid sports gamer. I get Madden every year. I get 2K every year. I get FIFA every year now. There are so many smart fans out there that are willing to do your player ratings for you, that are willing to adjust player tendencies and stuff so you can have a more lifelike experience with your video games. There is no reason for player ratings to be this bad. All of these companies make way too much money for me to see things like Bam Adebayo is as good of a perimeter defender as LaMelo Ball. They shouldn't have the same perimeter defense rating. Like, what are we doing? What are we watching? And this is a 2K specifically is a brand that claims, like, hey, we update our ratings daily. No, you don't. Not if that's what the ratings are. We need to do better. Every year that a 2K drops, there are just literal thousands of community members that do their own custom rosters because of this issue. Hire those guys. Hire a team rep from the 2K community to be like, hey, your literal job is to watch Grizzly games or to watch Hornets games or to watch Warriors games. You adjust what the player ratings are, or at the very least, what the player tendencies are. Because there's always a funny thing when a 2K drops where it's like, hey, why does this paint-bound center have like a step back three tendency of 95? Why am I watching Ekpe Udoh take pull-up threes in transition? He doesn't do that. So let's just be better. Too much money's being made for this to be the experience.
They should hire me if they want it done right, but it is what it is. You were late. Now you're caught up. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Jared Moore. You can follow Jasmine at Jasmine L. Watkins if you want. She was still very busy over the weekend, as queens are. And Nikias?
Yes, the L remains for luxurious on Jasmine's fronts. Please follow her. She's a goat. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. And with that, we will catch y'all on Wednesday.
Actually, Nikias, I'm glad you said that. That reminds me. Programming note, we will be doing the pod on Thursday this week instead of Wednesday, as we'll be reacting to Game 3 of the NBA Finals. So mark that on your calendar. Adios.